As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Spectres, welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We have a very special N7-day episode for you in the Mass Effect universe. This is, or at least among the fans, this is a lot like Christmas, but not quite Christmas, but it's sort of Christmas because we have a very special present for you today. Sam, I'm going to hand this off to you.
We have a very special guest joining us. You probably recognize him from his standout roles like the Elcor Bouncer, Niftu Kal, the Biotic God, the Preaching Hanar, and yeah, who could forget Blasto? No, of course, I'm joking, because we have with us someone who needs no introduction, the man behind the voice of Commander Shepard, Mark Meer. Thank you for joining us, Mark.
Not at all. Thanks for having me. And happy N7-day Eve.
Yes, happy N7-day to everyone, all of our listeners. We're recording this on the 6th, but this will be out on podcasting platforms on the 7th. So, excellent. I'm excited about N7-day. And, you know, I can imagine that things are probably picking up for you, Mark, around N7-day. I know that you were doing something Mass Effect related before this. What else have you been doing, you know, Mass Effect-y around this holiday for the community?
Well, just earlier this afternoon, I was recording a Mass Effect role-playing game with the cast of Mass Effect Inventum, and they had me on back in 2020 at the start of their second season. This was another season debut for them, and I got to reprise my role as a Vorcha named Vrick, who was always fun to play. And they're a great bunch, so I was delighted to return. We spent a few hours this afternoon recording, and I'm not quite sure when that's going to be released, but probably soonish.
And actually, that kind of touched on a question I was going to save for later, but I got to know, how do you do the Vorcha voice?
the version that I do in the role-playing game, a much more toned-down version. I'd be pretty raw if I'd spent all that time actually doing the full-on Vorcha voice. So, there was no technique to the way that I did it for the game. I was just like screeching as loud as I could with a mouth half full of water. That was my idea too. I don't know why I did that. I mean, I made it hard for myself. But we would tend to save the Vorcha stuff, anything we were recording, for the end of the week. We'll do that on the last thing on a Friday to give you a few days to recover from doing that. Thankfully, the Vorcha didn't have that much dialogue, but it popped up now and then because, of course, I play all of the Vorcha in the Mass Effect universe.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a certain level of gurgly quality to it, so the water makes sense.
Yeah,
that's the secret. But it's the water. That's amazing.
That's how I did it.
Well, you heard it at the start of our episode here. You know, you've given your endorsement as Shepard out to many things. I know
that's the kind of the gag. So yes, I never hesitate to give my endorsement, even for something that I haven't seen yet. I'll be happy to do it. Yeah,
I was going to ask what is the most unusual or unorthodox thing that you've ever given Shepard's stamp of approval on?
I don't know if there's anything particularly odd. To be honest, it's usually podcasts and YouTube channels and whatnot. And of course, you know, signing that on 8x10s. But, you know, there is something that I've written on, you know, autographs and those sort of things as much as anything that's in the game, which is, of course, well, bang. OK, which never appears in any of the Mass Effect games. But thanks to Manslayer, I ended up with a new catchphrase that BioWare didn't write. So, yeah, I've written that on posters and stuff as much as anything that's in the game.
That's amazing.
That's incredible.
These are my favorite cotton swabs on the Citadel.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a close second, but I think Will Bang OK is in the lead. And on cameos as well. Yeah, they tend to like that one.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So, OK, so how did you first get connected with Mass Effect? Like, let's go back in time now. Mm-hmm. Was this 15 years ish or
it's
more?
15 years since the release of the first Mass Effect. And this year is also the 10th anniversary of the release of Mass Effect 3, but I would have started working on it way back in 2005. Probably. Wow. Was the first. Yeah. Wow.
What was that like? I mean, this was obviously a big opportunity, but a new IP, you didn't know how big it was going to be.
Well, you know, I've been working with BioWare for, you know, since the late 90s, essentially. So for many years and doing mostly monster and antagonist voices. And that's why long before I was actually cast as Commander Shepard, I was brought in early in the creative process on the first Mass Effect, back when they were at the concept art stage. And I was just basically brought in to do a presentation on what the baseline of every alien race would sound like. This is what a typical Salarian would sound like. This is what a typical Krogan would sound like, and so on and so forth. And I think I've mentioned before in other interviews, they didn't necessarily take all of my suggestions because the Turians, for example, again, we didn't even know Garrus was going to be in the game at this point, but I was just like looking at their mouth structure and just, you know, stuff about their culture, you know, the binder of stuff I'd been given on all these alien races. And I sort of suggested, oh, okay, well, maybe they could make a little click sound when they, you know, after, just because of their facial structure, you know, either at the end of sentences or something like that. When Garrus was, you know, actually created and put in the game, it was swiftly realized we probably don't want a lot of clicking in we're going to hear it a lot if it's Garrus. So let's nix that. But some stuff they did take, some stuff's fairly obvious, like the Krogan are large and gruff sounding. That's because they're large and gruff. But the Volus with their sort of patented wheeze, I threw that in, and actually for the Volus I performed, actually just did the wheeze myself. It's not a sound effect. The Salarians, I always take credit for the Salarians kind of sounding like Steve Buscemi in terms of cadence and just his speech pattern.
I hadn't thought about that before. That's amazing.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi, he was like, because the first Salarian I ever played in a demo stuff thing, again, long before I was cast as Shepard, was a Salarian bartender. So that one especially really did sound like Steve Buscemi.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then, of course, I was doing some demo work during that period. That's when I was asked to audition for Commander Shepard. And I didn't hold out any hope at all of getting it because up to that point, it's like, oh, well, I mean, this is the lead of the game. So obviously, I'll just get to do some aliens. That'll be fine. And so even through all the callback process, I never really put much stock into it until I was told it was down to like me and two guys from LA to actually be Neil Shepard. And so I was very surprised when I actually got it.
But, that is amazing.
I also, of course, got to be a bunch of aliens as well. So I got to be Shepard and aliens.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. The acting process, it's lots of trying out for different roles and trying out lots. And you're always just like, oh, it'd be nice if this works out. But if it doesn't, that's kind of how most things go.
Yeah, you can't really, you know, pin your hopes on a single audition. It's just like, I did an audition. We'll see what happens. And in this case, everything did work out.
That's amazing.
That's like, I feel like, you know, it's Shepard isn't just a lead, right? Because Shepard is kind of a unique RPG character. At least I remember back in 2007 that it was unique to have an RPG character who had a definitive voice.
Well, yeah, I mean, up until that point, it was always just a block of text. And so Jennifer and I essentially had the opportunity to be, we will be the first fully voiced protagonist. And so, Shepard was really groundbreaking in that way.
Was it difficult having this RPG lead who could have multiple different backgrounds, a wide scale of morality and motivations? And like, how did that affect how you approached giving life to some of those lines?
Well, of course, Commander Shepard is kind of unique in that their personality is completely shaped by the player. So Shepard could be anything on a wide spectrum of morality, for example, like could be anything from, essentially a borderline sociopath and certainly extremely violent to essentially a Boy Scout or Girl Scout. So that meant that there's no definitive Commander Shepard, and you can't go, well, Commander Shepard wouldn't do that. And it's like, oh, Commander Shepard has done terrible things and also very selfless things and could be any one of those. The other thing is, of course, that not everyone's going to go, I'm going to go pure renegade, I'm going to go pure paragon. We had to find a voice that would work for people who are like going back and forth, even like taking like really rapid swings as far as between paragon and renegade choices without it sounding like the character was having extreme mood swings.
Yeah.
So there was a baseline to Commander Shepard, and that was a military officer who's used to giving orders under pressure and is cool and collected. But regardless of whether they're quite moral or if they're just, you know, Dirty Harry.
That's great. You know, I enjoy your voice performances. I love you as male Shepard. That said, I especially love you as renegade male Shepard.
Thank you.
I feel like when I'm being a total douche and it's your voice it's so good. It hits well.
Let's face it, the renegade interrupts are pretty fun.
It's so good. The way you deliver them is just wonderful. Now, let's talk about some of your favorite memories working on these games, because this was over a series of years, multiple games. Do you have a favorite instance, a favorite memory, a funny situation, something that just comes to mind from doing the lines?
Of course, I was recording in Edmonton, where BioWare is. A lot of the cast were in LA. We had some of the cast in London and whatnot. So for the most part, I didn't really meet the cast until we started doing conventions together. Even speaking to cast members who were in LA, they didn't really record together per se.
Yeah, we've talked about how it is phenomenal how good the voice acting is for a bunch of actors who don't actually get to see each other face to face, and sometimes don't even have the other person's lines yet, or at least you have them written, but you don't have them acted to you.
That's true. That would tend to be if you went early in a given scene, because often I would have everybody in my headset. Like, for example, a scene that is a favorite of both Jennifer and mine, the scene with Keith David, and spoilers, Anderson's death scene. I think it's fine to get spoilers from this thing.
Sure.
But that was a really powerful scene. And to have Keith David's performance in your headset as you're recording it, that was really great.
What's the hardest choice you've had to make as a player in the games? Because I know that you've played through the games before.
I made some very poor choices in Mass Effect 2, I'll say that, because the first time that I went through as a renegade, I tend to do a renegade and paragon playthrough, but my renegade really cut corners. So that suicide mission didn't go so very well at the end. I lost a lot of characters that one. So I'll regret a lot of the choices that, and I had to go back. It was just like, know, normally I would just move on to my Paragon playthrough, but it was like, nope, gotta renegade one can't end like that. So you like went fairly far back.
So there's no shame in save scumming then.
Oh no, none at all. I certainly have none. And the bits of Mass Effect 3 that I did play through completely, like I was playing at BioWare, I definitely had no shame about, we're playing this on story mode. I want to see all the scenes. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I still haven't done like a complete playthrough of Mass Effect 3 because I got pretty far into it. But that save was at BioWare. So when I got my copy, it's like, I would have to start over from the beginning. And also there wasn't the incentive of I've got to finish this before we do the next one. So yeah.
Yeah, of course. Now speaking of choices, we have put out two previous surveys mm-hmm. to our listeners here, and it has generated quite a lot of buzz because not everyone, you know, of course agrees on the surveys and the choices. So I wanted to ask you in kind of rapid fire style,
sure,
your choices or the choices that you would consider to be, you know, canon for your playthroughs.
Okay. But Renegade and Paragon, like I say, I've done both Renegade and Paragon playthroughs.
Whichever you like more, I think.
Whatever you would consider your canon playthrough.
Yeah. Oh, but I can't. I have to give you equal weight. I can't play favorites. Oh. Even my Shepard cosplay is like Two-Face style, half Renegade and half Paragon.
Oh wow!
But
okay.
Yes, I will attempt to adhere to your rules. So,
all right. So number one, who dies on Vermeier, Caden or Ashley?
Okay, this one, I've admitted this to Raphael when we've been on panels together. So this is not a bombshell per se. I killed Caden both times through because my Renegade was actually in a relationship with Ashley, so obviously he wasn't going to kill his love interest. And then the Paragon was too much of a Boy Scout to kill the lady, so it was Kate both times. I have to do a playthrough where I keep Raphael alive. I've promised to do that.
Chat, yes, is lamenting Caden right now.
I am very
I'm
much
so sorry. And Raphael is awesome, and Caden is a great character. It's just that on my specific playthroughs, that's where my shepherds were. And of course, I did things. I like to get into the role play of it when I'm playing through a game that I recorded dialogue for. So my Renegade Shepherd, for example, he was buddies with the Krogan. Like, he got on great with Rex and he got on great with Grunt. So whenever it came to a question of backing the Krogan, he would always do that, even if it wasn't the actual Renegade choice. It was always like, no, sorry, man.
Yeah, Krogans are my headcanon.
Krogans are my Brogans. So yeah,
I like that. I like the nuance in playing your character that way. I enjoy mm-hmm. that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So save or doom the Rachni Queen?
I believe the Renegade choice was to save it because it could be used later. And I think my Paragon actually did doom.
It was wow.
The risk is too great. The risk is too great.
Wow. Yes, I respect that as well. So you already talked about your suicide mission, and I was going to ask you about that. So I'll skip the next one. Did you salvage or did you destroy the collector base? The end of Mass Effect.
Renegade salvaged it for Cerberus, and Paragon destroyed. And the thing was, like, I was as mad as anyone when I came back and was like, what do you mean I don't have access to, what do you mean Cerberus is now turned on me? I did so much stuff for them, my Renegade especially.
Right on. So you already answered, you know, I was going to ask about the Genophage, but I'm 110% positive you cure it.
Yeah.
And okay, so who wins the Geth Corian War? Or do you negotiate peace?
My Paragon was in fact able to negotiate peace. And Renegade just backed the Quarians.
Right on. Yeah. I'm still finding new iterations of that scene with Legion and Tally and Shepard on that ridge.
Yeah, it's possible. It's very hard, but you can broker the peace where you don't lose either of them, and it all works out, which is good because my Paragon's love interest in 3 was Tally. So yeah, it was, I had a lot riding on that.
Well, Tom, did you want to ask nice. A question?
Well, I like this. We posted some questions to each other before doing this, but there's one specifically. Throughout Mass Effect 3, we really see a difference in tone, and from Shepard specifically, there's a lot of character development from 1 all the way to 3. What was your thought process behind Shepard's mental state? Like when they tell Garrus, I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Okay, now, specifically in Mass Effect 3, that was when, direction-wise, we were given a little more license to show a bit more emotion. Because in the first one especially, if I ever got a note or had to redo a line, it was like, there's too much emotion in that, we got to level that out. And one of the reasons was to prevent these massive mood swings in between, but also because Shepard is a soldier and does not crack under pressure. The thing is, by the time you get to Mass Effect 3, even Shepard is starting to crack under pressure because it's been a lot. There's, you know, the threat of the Reapers and actually being there and the war against the Reapers and the accumulated battle scars, really, mental as well as physical. They were willing to let us show a little more of Shepard's human side and show that this is really taking an actual toll on Shepard. And that was really cool to get to have that arc over these three games.
Yeah, it feels a lot looser by the time you get to three. He feels just more kind of open and expressive.
Well, and also because it sort of makes sense, because up until that point, Shepard hasn't had any of the relationships, whichever ones the players choose. But I suspect that on almost any playthrough, unless that, you know, I guess there's a playthrough where I didn't talk to the crew. I just did the missions. And, you know, it probably didn't go well, you know, that if you didn't unlock their loyalty and whatnot, but there's going to be relationships with whatever crew members you talk to. And those relationships then change Shepard, and probably for being able to open up more and especially open up around the other members of the crew.
And kind of adding on to that, along with this toll that's being taken on Shepard, you know, the recurring dream sequences with Shepard running through the forest and hearing the whispers in the background from the fallen squad mates and Shepard himself, and then finding that, you know, child from the very beginning up in flames in the dream. You know, what do you think that those images and that sequence of things, albeit, you know, as I can remember, with besides the whispers in the background, it wasn't voiced. What do you think that those were supposed to mean for Shepard?
Well, it all ties into the indoctrination theory. No, I'm joking, of course.
Chad is actually asking about that. So I don't know if we want to get there at some point. Just wanted to point that out.
I'll address it now, actually. I am quite familiar with indoctrination theory. And like when it came out, and you know, I actually like read it. People sent this to me. And I'm, you know, as I was reading it, I'm just like, oh, this makes sense. This could be plausible. Was it that, but they just didn't tell me about it? And I don't think it is actually true. And I think the writers have gone on record, but it is a very well thought out theory. I have to say that. I don't think it ties into indoctrination theory at all, but it does tie into, we've got multiple possible endings. One that I do see a direct link to is if you do the control ending, where essentially Shepard becomes a Reaper. And I've always thought about that as like, okay, are the things that he's saying, is this the future himself who is a Reaper, like sort of broadcasting this back somehow, his consciousness through time? Could that be it? Like, that's one possible interpretation. And I think a lot of these things are left open to interpretation, like as things are in film, as they are in plays. Sometimes imagery is left, you don't necessarily have to go, this is what this means, and this means A, B, and C. This can be like, this is more something that we present to the audience and they interpret it as they see fit.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? window instead of middle seat, picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket, outsourcing business tasks you hate. What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like Tom had said, I had planned on asking you about the indoctrination theory. And so, like you mentioned, we know it's not canon per se.
It is not canon, no. But like when I read it, it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, this could check out. Who knows?
It's even so, I think that the community at large accepts that it's not canon. But there's still a lot of people who don't trust that Star Child intelligence at the end. Our own results of our survey say 76% of respondents, and I think there were 400 respondents, said that they don't. And
this could be an elaborate double bluff, a very long con that BioWare is playing. And, you know, 10 years down the road, they reveal, it was all just indoctrination. I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
but boy, would that be a great long con? Wouldn't that be something? That would be on the 20th anniversary of the game, they go,
gotcha.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That we only have 5 years to go, really.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll be on the 20th anniversary of Mass Effect 3. So we got 10 years to go.
When you were recording those lines, you know, right at the very end, when you're on top of the crucible and you're talking with the intelligence, what did you know about how that scene would go? Like, did they give you a lot of prior knowledge, or were you just reading the script that you were supposed
to? Oh, no, I definitely had it explained to me. And I also have the advantage of being doing my recording in Edmonton. BioWare's offices are here. I'd often have writers in my sessions, in my recording sessions. Sometimes the head writer, sometimes Mac was there as well. So that was really good, because whenever you wanted to, you know, it's like, it's a bit awkward. This phrasing is, it's a bit of a mouthful to say it this way. Can I just rearrange the sentence? They could just instantly clear that. Normally you'd have to go through a process, and we had to keep especially close eye on any dialogue changes, because Jennifer and I had to be saying the same thing. So if she recorded first and like they'd changed a few lines, they'd always track to make sure that I had to change dialogue, and vice versa. If I recorded first and asked to rephrase something, they'd always make sure that the changes were reflected in her script as well.
Yeah, that's cool. I've got a question I want to ask. One of our other surveys, our results indicated more people feel Edie is a person than the Geth. Edie person, Geth not people. So the question is, are Geth and Edie people?
I would consider them to be so. They seem to be sentient. So yes, I would say, you know, a particularly renegade shepherd, depending on where they see things lining up, might have a different answer. I think Edie is more her consciousness seems to be more recognizably sentient, because, you know, for example, her cadence and syntax and everything matches more closely to what the other characters are doing. But I don't think that makes Legion, or particularly Legion or any of the other Geth, less sentient. So I would say, yes, they are people.
So that actually was my follow-up question.
The Vision is a person, too.
Okay. So yeah, that was my follow-up question, is why do you think Edie...
Also, Johnny Five.
Johnny Five.
Short Circuit.
Also, he's alive.
Also a person.
Also a person. Yeah, so it's mostly Edie because she's more human-like, even if none of them are human.
Human features. I mean, Legion doesn't even have a nose. I suppose it's easier to go, oh, that's just an appliance if they have a big spotlight for a face. But what we should be looking at is what the intelligence and communication that they're actually capable of.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, so when it comes to the most controversial choices in the game, I have to ask you, which of the endings do you prefer to the series?
We talked about one of them before. So I'll say this. Before the extended version of the ending, my favorite was Destroy. Because, you know, of course, that has the Shepard inhalation and all that. And it's like, ah, Shepard survives in that one. So, yes, of course, I picked that one. But after the extended edition, I would have to say Control is my favorite ending. Because I always say it's like, that's the one where Shepard becomes Galactus at the end. and, of course, you know, Jennifer and I got to voice that ending as well. So that's lots of fun. Also, there are subtle differences. There are two different versions of that final speech. If you're very far to the Paragon end of the spectrum, it's a lot more hopeful. It's a lot more like, oh, OK, this might work out. And Shepard will be this benevolent entity, or what used to be Shepard that is now a Reaper will be this benevolent entity. But the extreme renegade one is quite, yeah, it's fairly ominous. And it's just like, oh, this is not going to go well. This is renegade Shepard with the power of a Reaper. So, yeah, I liked the subtle differences between the two of those.
Now, I didn't actually know that there's multiple iterations of the Control ending speech.
I certainly did record that. And I think... I wonder if people have actually realized that it's like, oh, yeah, there's a slightly darker take on essentially the same dialogue.
Well, that's quite possible, you know, because I haven't picked Control because I've always felt like, and it was kind of a total like gotcha. I felt like that the Control was blue, right? And the Destroy was red. So it's Paragon Renegade and it turned the choices on players. But when Mass Effect 3 ended, not player wise, but mark wise, when it ended, how did you feel? For players, it was this, you know, really long journey and epic journey and heroes that we all really came to love. But how was it on the other side of things?
Well, of course, when the, you know, Mass Effect 3 was released, that was not the end for us because we knew that we had all the DLC yet to come. And so it wasn't until a year after that was the Citadel was the final DLC. And my very last line that I recorded for Citadel, so the last line I did for the franchise was the best, quite a ride. So that was really great. I loved Citadel as a DLC. I loved all the in jokes in it and the straight up fan service and getting to play the evil clone Shepard, all these things. But there was also honest emotion in it as well. My friend Kathleen Rootsart, one of the writers at BioWare, she was a real champion for having the big party on the Citadel. Because I think we can address it. When Mass Effect 3 came out, there were people who were like quite upset that it was just like, oh, I don't get to say goodbye to these characters that I've spent so much time with. And for that final DLC, Kathleen really... She, as I say, championed it and said, no, these people need a chance to see everybody one last time and say goodbye to these characters. And I love the final party. And you also get to see characters interact, like you get to see Rex and Grunt in the same room and Zaid and, you know, all hanging out again. They get, you know, those three get along quite well. So getting to see all the characters interact in a social setting like that, it was that's a lot of fun. And of course, there's, you know, the fun evil clone caper that goes along with that and all the in jokes that came with that. I should go. Do I sound like that? All those things. You got to have the scene. The scene with me playing Shepard, and then he finally runs into Blasto face to face, who I also do the voice of, and then there's a Vorcha there in the scene as well. So, fun things like that.
Talking to yourself, to yourself, to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. it's the magic of
not the first time that's happened.
Yeah, me inside my own head. Awesome.
I know just in the game, because of course there's scenes where. Both Jennifer and I play Mercs as well. And there was I want to say it was in the second one. There's a little scene where whichever one of us is Shepard is sneaking up on two Mercs and they're played by Jennifer and I.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So
that's amazing.
We're getting to the end of the half hour. I know we've had you for about 30 minutes.
Yes.
Should we wrap things up? Can you answer maybe one or two?
I can go a little longer if you have more questions. I don't want to leave you hanging.
We would love to keep you here as long as you would love to stay with us. So,
well, not too much longer.
Not too much longer. You let us know.
My wife wants to have supper, so I won't keep her waiting forever.
Perfect. Perfect. There's something I had a question about. Obviously, you're plugged into the community. You've been a part of these games for a very long time now. And then with the bringing back of this trilogy and Legendary Edition and all of that, do you think that there's anything that we as the community don't give enough credit to? We don't talk about enough? Something in the games you're like, oh, this thing is so cool and nobody's talking about it.
I don't know, because the people, Mass Effect fans in particular, like they find all the gems and they find things to love. And there's like, I once actually cosplayed just based on a webcomic called Vorcha Dad that somebody wrote, which was basically, Asari, of course, no matter what species they mate with, the offspring is always Asari. So it was about a Vorcha and an Asari who'd had a baby together. And the Vorcha had, because the Asari had a good job, the Vorcha became a stay-at-home dad. So it's just like a Vorcha and his Asari daughter hanging out.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff within the Mass Effect universe like that. So, yeah, I think the fans, they plumb every depth and and find every mountain peak.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on this. This is one of the questions that we asked in our previous survey. And the question is, if there was a spin-off Mass Effect TV show or anime, which of these topics or settings would you like to see? Mm-hmm. And the options being the First Contact War, the Arachni War or Krogan Rebellions, or a standalone origin series of the Squadmates, similar to those comics that came out, or Andromeda after the game, after Andromeda concludes, or a series on the Asari Justicars, or a C-Sec crime drama film noir detective story.
I like all of these. I actually did a role-playing game called a C-Sec, Mass Effect C-Sec, that I did with Roll for It, which was a lot of fun. Let's see. I mean, First Contact War, that's the big one. I think that's the one you do. And, that's like a big main series, and then you could do like little mini-series with... like maybe we do a little C-Sec film noir thing. Maybe you do a little Justicar storyline. But I think, First Contact War, that's nice and meaty that you can really sink your teeth into.
Just turn it into the Mass Effect cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Have you seen the anime movie, Mark, Paragon Lost, I believe?
I did, years ago when it first came out. And I'd love to see more anime and, various cartoons all styles, really. It's a big universe and it supports so much storytelling. As you say, like you mentioned the little origin story one shots for the Squadmates. That I think that Dark Horse series would be a good one to adapt. And of course, I would like to see an adaptation of Blasto's Dark Horse comic.
Oh, I need to see that. Everyone does. And this is a question I ask my friends all the time. Like, we chat in Discord about it. So I think it's kind of funny to ask you as well. If all of these characters, specifically the squad mates and whatnot in Mass Effect, were real, and, who do you think that you as an individual would get along best with in life?
I mean, Morden, probably. Morden. I'm a theater actor. He likes show tunes. He'd probably be a good patron of the arts.
That makes sense.
I can imagine he would be very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Morden would be nice to be friends with. You wouldn't want to get on his bad side, though.
No, very true. Very true. And let's see. Tali, because, I'm a nerd myself and she's a nerd. Let's face it.
And if I remember right, I heard that you had your wife was also a voice on one of the games. Is that right?
Yes, in all of the games. As a matter of fact, in the first Mass Effect, she is the very first voice that you hear. She's the Alliance computer who sets up your Shepard with you. She also has a recurring role as an Asari scientist called Renath Anoptis, who's engaged in, shall we say, questionable experiments, and you have the choice whether to let her go or well, kill her in the first game. She comes back and then like a bunch of Alliance folks and whatnot.
So did you kill her as your renegade shepherd, and were you in the doghouse?
I did not. I did not kill that character, even as renegade shepherd. Like I said, my renegade didn't always go with the renegade choice.
Got it. Well, Tom, do you
he
have
did throw questions? A lot of people out of windows, though, and he stabbed Kai Lang for sure.
Oh, you gotta do. You gotta.
You gotta do stab Kai Lang. You know what? My Paragon stabbed Kai Lang too.
Always. I always smash that renegade interrupt. That is the one that is non-negotiable for me. Mm-hmm. I always got to do it. But
so,
Tom, do you have any other questions?
We need to wrap this up. I've got one last question before we get to the "what other things are you working on you want to share" question. But before we get to sure. that, we obviously you said you're a nerd. You love playing these games. You love playing lots of games. You and I talked about some other games even in the pre-show stuff. Besides Mass Effect, what are your other favorite games? What are your go-tos?
I gotta say, I love Fallout, and I know you guys do a Lorecast on Fallout as well. Yeah, I love mm-hmm. the Fallout universe, love the design of that game, the art direction, love everything about Fallout. The beginning of the pandemic, I was playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2 because I hadn't actually cracked the plastic on that yet. It was just like, well, about time to play this, and
great
so
game.
It was. I had a great time playing that. I really had. Dug exploring all the weird stuff that they had buried in the game, like the flying saucer and the vampire and like in New Orleans and
yeah,
all these things, the Sasquatch, and then things that didn't even have like a mission related to it. I found that one weird little house that has some sort of like Frankenstein experiment with the man boar pig man, the sort of like sewn together out of like a boar and a bear and
Yeah, that game is so
good.
And
again, like a beautiful like setting, a little environment, but it actually doesn't have a quest associated with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking your time to join us and being here, and getting to meet you has been wonderful. I know you're working on lots of other projects. Is there something else you want to shout out before we wrap this up?
Ah, geez, let's see. Okay, well, of course, I'm in The Long Dark with Jennifer Hale, and we're not playing the same person this time. We're playing a divorced couple, so we actually get to have scenes together, which is always fun. That comes out episodically, and there's, of course, the sandbox mode where it's just all about survival in the North, and there is a story mode as well. And that's a lot of fun. Quite enjoy that very Canadian game. I call it Player versus Canada.
That's what it is. I didn't realize you guys were in that. That's amazing.
Yes. We are the leads of that game. Let's see. Gotham Knights. Play Gotham Knights. I'm in that. Enjoy your time in Gotham. Beyond that, I am doing a lot of tabletop RPG stuff lately, especially during the pandemic. I've been playing since the 1980s, but I got into the streaming aspect of it. But actually, I don't do any of the hard work. I just join Zoom meetings and someone else who knows what they're doing makes sure it becomes a stream. But I just wrapped up the Black Dice Society, which was an 18-month Ravenloft campaign. One of my favorite D&D settings. And so all the VOD is up on the official Dungeons & Dragons YouTube channel. It's about 60 episodes to get through of that. And our story is complete now, so you don't have to worry about, I'm getting behind. You can watch it at your leisure. Beyond that, I'm starting a new actual play that just had its debut at Roll20 Con. It's called Bookshops of Arkham, and it's a Call of Cthulhu campaign where I am the keeper, and that will be coming out, I believe, later this month from Chaosium and Roll20. And let's see, what else do I actually have to plug? There's a bunch of D&D things that they're sold out anyway, so I'd just be bragging if I told you about them, but there were some things where I'm the dungeon master where you can come and play. I just got back from D&D in a castle in the UK, doing that for the last 2 weeks actually, but there's a D3 at Sea. Sure, I'll plug them anyway. D3 at Sea is coming up because they always have events in the future. I also did a thing called Gaming at the Lake, which is a private game on Lake Sinclair in Georgia at a well-appointed nerdy cabin / lake house, just playing Dungeons & Dragons with me as your DM. And beyond that, there's things coming out that I don't think I can talk about yet. I think this has been announced. Myth Force from Beam Dog, which is in early access right now. It's a combination of Picture every cartoon from the 80s. And so the old Dungeons and Dragons cartoon with a heaping helping of like Master of the Universe and Silverhawks and various other things. And it's a lot of fun. I get to play a villain in that.
Oh, cool. I've seen the trailer. I think there's a trailer that's out for that. So yeah, go look that up. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and to be here. Happy N7 Day.
Happy N7 Day, everyone.
Happy N7 Day, everyone.
I should go, everyone.
Should go. Well, before we hang up, we gotta shout out.
Bang okay, everybody.
Okay. So thank you to all of our supporters. We're not going to do the normal mid-break end show stuff. We're just going to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons who help support us and get shout outs. Kolkashins, Kira C, Lieutenant Susino, Shep Valkyrian, and William. Thank you for your support. And thank you again, Mark Meir, for being here. This has been amazing. To everybody else, have a wonderful N7 day, and we will see you again next week. Stay safe out there in the galaxy. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.